It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to our Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. At least it's sunny, right? After the sun did come up, as they say, after the Cats had a controversial defeat last night at the hands of LSU in Rupp Arena, 73-71, on a last-second tip-in by Cavell Bigby Williams, and LSU now has sole possession of second place in the SEC. And we'll talk about all of this today. It'll be the primary topic of conversation, not the call, but the game. Brian Milam from WKYT is with us. And Brian and Sam Dick from KYT were on the road trip last weekend to Starkville, working on a behind-the-scenes traveling with the Cats special that is going to be on the UK TV network next month. So we'll get a little discussion with him about that as well. Chris Fisher from the Cats Paw is always with us on Wednesdays. And Chris Dortch from the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. And we'll be talking with Chris not only about last night's game, but looking ahead to the matchup with Tennessee on Saturday. That's our guest lineup presented by Sleep Outfitters. Our show always served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And let's get right to the Wildcat news of the day. Service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. The missed basket or disputed basket interference, I should say. There are angles that you might be able to make the case that it wasn't basket interference. Everything I've seen so far, it would be to me basket interference. But they couldn't make that call on the review. When they were going over to do the review, all they could look at was the timing issue and whether or not the ball was off the hand of the LSU player before the red light came on, before it hit zeros. And there were a group of fans behind the scorer's table, and Joe Lindsay on the officiating crew waved his hands from side to side. And I think initially those fans thought he was saying that the basket didn't count, but what he was saying was that the game was over. And they had the rug those fans did pulled out from under them, because I think initially they thought he was waving off the basket. Cal suggested after the game that this is might get changed to where you can look at something like that on review. There was another shot I saw of EJ's hand in the basket, and there was some discussion that would have been goaltending as well on Kentucky, but the ball hadn't hit the rim yet, so as long as his hand was out of there, it was before the ball hit the rim, then that would not have been goaltending. But Oscar Combs gets engaged in Twitter, and it was some interesting stuff with John Adams, who's a former national head of officiating. And last night from John Adams, he had a response to one of Oscar's tweets, and he said, "The fix? ? If you have a mandatory review of last-second game-deciding shots, use it for anything else you see, but only at the end of game or overtime. Easy fix. Pretty sure you'll see a rule change." So that's from a former head of officials. And if that happens, it'll be as Cal pointed out last night when you had the situation in the Wisconsin game in the Final Four, where there was a Wisconsin made a shot that was clearly after the shot clock had expired, but it was outside of the final 2 minutes, so they couldn't review it. Well, now they can. They changed that rule after that. So this could be another Kentucky-related rule change that comes about. We'll see. But I thought that was interesting from John Adams. A couple of things as far as key points for Kentucky. I thought the big difference in the second half, LSU at halftime had zero offensive rebound points, and 6 points in the paint. They've got 24 points in the paint in the second half, many of those off the result of 12 offensive rebounds. They got 12 points, off offensive rebounds out of those 24 points in the paint. So Kentucky had situations where they defended the first shot well but didn't get the rebound. And Kentucky led the league in defensive rebound percentage. LSU led the league in offensive rebound percentage. And LSU got the best of it in the second half. Kentucky only had one blocked shot against all that inside presence of LSU in the second half. LSU was 18 of 35 on two-point shots, which is going to be a big stat to track on Saturday because Tennessee makes its living in the paint. All of this serves to underscore something that first Mike Pratt said and John Calipari has said many times, that for this team to be all it can be, it needs Nick Richards. Nick is the guy that is the guy most capable of addressing some of those things that got Kentucky beat last night. And Nick's just not playing well at the moment, so he's not playing much. And E.J. Montgomery is certainly rebounding well, and he can challenge shots, but Nick is the best shot blocker and shot effector that they have. And if they could get even just 10 good minutes out of him, much less the 18 to 20 that Callis talked about, they would be a much, much better team. But will it happen? The wait continues. A couple of other things. Higgins and Quickley right now are really struggling with their shots. And I think it's in their heads a little bit, the way other teams are playing them. Particularly Ashton, I think, more than Emmanuel. Emmanuel's still taking shots. He's not making them. And I asked Cal about it in the pregame yesterday, and he said in practice they do these five-minute shooting drills. He'll make more than 60. So he said there's no reason he shouldn't be making them in a game. And it's just, and he's getting in work and practice. He's a guy that shows up, takes a lot of extra shots. So I think it'll come, hopefully sooner rather than later. But with Ashton, I think it's more, even more so in his head, and really affecting his game. So PJ Washington, though, was really good. When he picked up his fourth foul and had to go out, that was a key point in the game that contributed to Kentucky's defeat. They were up two when he went out. They were down four by the time he came back, and he was really good down the stretch for Kentucky. He was the guy on a night when Kentucky was struggling to make outside shots. He was the toughest guy for LSU to guard, so not having him out on the floor there for several minutes was certainly critical for Kentucky. Links to the stories that we talk about, you can find them on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We're heading to a break. At some point, we'll probably talk a little bit about maybe with Chris Dortch some of these other results from last night, including Duke's incredible comeback at Louisville to win by two after trailing by 23. Michigan lost last night. Purdue lost. So it's that scoreboard watching time of year for all college basketball fans. We'll be right back with Brian Milam.
Find out more about the Voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
17 after the top of the hour. We head to the Kentucky Brandon Hotline. Bring on Brian Milam from WKYT-TV, the UK flagship station on the UK Sports Network. And Brian, we'll start with the game last night. And I think the ESPN Game Day show is coming to town on Saturday. One of the things I would expect they might get into in one of their discussion segments will be the debate on whether or not this particular rule should or will be changed to what you can look at on review. Came up in the NFL in the playoffs, so being able to look at more things on review than are currently allowed. What's your take on it?
I just think if you have instant replay, you're using it for a reason, and that is to get the call right, no matter what that call may be. And last night, obviously, the call was not right in terms of there was certainly basket interference. I could see it from up top from where I was. I know the majority of 20,000 fans could see it from where they were sitting. But at the end of the day, it only resides on three people, and neither of the officials made the call. But if you have instant replay, just like we see it, we saw it in the NFC Championship game. That was obviously pass interference. This was basket interference. And it was a deflating way to end a game that was so enjoyable to watch, with big shot countered by bigger shot, and the clutch free throws UK hit was huge. But what an empty feeling for a lot of people leaving Rupp Arena last night.
Very true. To your point about the plays down the stretch, that was one thing Cal did mention in our post-game chat, which was, I thought, a very valid point as far as the bigger picture, is that, you know, they are, at one point they were down five with about two and change to go, and they did everything right to put themselves in a position, almost everything right, to put themselves in a position to come back and win that game. And so that's encouraging because you're going to be in those kinds of games at some point. You get to the probably even the second weekend of the NCAA tournament.
So no doubt. And, you know, Cal said a couple of days ago, the Mississippi State LSU Tennessee stretch is an NCAA tournament stretch. It's a Sweet 16. It's an Elite Eight. And we saw that last night with the way LSU played, countered by Kentucky, then countered by LSU. It was a postseason-type atmosphere. It was a postseason-type performance. And, you know, not too many times I can think of where Kentucky has lost in rough on a buzzer beater. Usually it's the other way around. And in the Cal era, I can only think of two other times Kentucky lost at the buzzer, the Luke May shot, and then the Arkansas putback dunk several years ago. Something you just don't see in Rupp Arena, but you have to credit Kentucky, especially Keldon Johnson. I mean, two of the most pressure free throws that young man has probably ever had to hit in his life.
Absolutely, and he stepped up there and calmly knocked them down. How his shot there, I don't know, it was about 30 seconds to go, didn't go in, I don't know. Would have put Kentucky ahead, and then they get the rebound and then turn it over, unfortunately, because they could have had the last shot there.
You know, I was wondering also, and I didn't ask it last night, but the three that Tyler Hero took with about 8 seconds to go, that was not a good shot to take. I don't know if he was rushed. I don't know if that was the play that Cal had set up. Look, we're going for the win right now, or give yourself a chance to get the rebound. And Kentucky, rebounding was the key to last night's game,
yes,
obviously, later on down the stretch, and obviously with no time left on the clock, that's how it was decided.
Talk with Brian Milam from WKYT. One more thing on the debate about what using review, and I was driving into the show this morning, and a show that precedes this one on several stations is Michael Bennett's show. One of his callers came on and suggested that you open up a Pandora's box if you start going to review and being able to call anything you see, so that you can make a call that wasn't made in real time, so that you know you're looking at whether the shot beat the buzzer or not, and then you see that the guy actually took an extra step, and so you end up calling walking. Is that a concern as we go down this road?
Well, I think anytime you tweak anything, just like the laws of the government, if you tweak it, well, now you're going to have to tweak it again to fit every single
tweak the tweak
scenario. But I think in basketball, you go to the monitor to see if a toe was on the line. You go to the monitor to see if the ball was released before the horn sounds. If you go to the monitor for all of these in a game-deciding situation, it just makes common sense to go to the monitor to see, oh, yeah, well, granted, EJ's hand was in the basket before the ball hit the rim.
So that was not goaltending.
Right. But I tell you what, I did see, and I know it's a different level, but I saw a regional championship game in high school basketball decided on that call about 10 years ago.
Wow.
The place went nuts, obviously. And last night, so many people, I think, left empty because there was no announcement made as to what the call was. You just saw people run off the floor and LSU go crazy. And a lot of people were thinking, why didn't they call it, not knowing the rule that was not in place, that you cannot look at a basket interference. So I'm sure, like Cal said last night, it'll be changed by next year, because that's what happens to Kentucky. They change rules.
Let's get to just a little bit of a discussion of last weekend. You and Sam Dick and your crew made the road trip with the Cats to Starkville for a special that's going to be on the UK TV network next month, right?
That is correct. We came up with the idea. Sam Dick had it back in August, and we discussed it and said, you know, what would it be like to let the common fan, just the regular everyday UK fan, see what goes on behind the scenes? What's it like for the players at practice? What's it like when they board the bus, the plane, their meals, their video review? Literally just about every single thing that goes into a player's day, what the managers have to do, what the trainers have to do, the coaches, literally every aspect of what goes on. And I think people are really going to enjoy this when it hits the air in a couple of weeks.
Anything that surprised you?
Kids are kids, and we look at 18 to 22-year-olds, and Cal talks about it all the time. You know, you never know what you're going to get out of these guys. But the genuine joy they have around one another, that didn't surprise me because I've always thought that we put so much emphasis on games and whatnot, but the camaraderie of a team is really important. And you could see that there was there is a true, genuine love for each other on this team. That was great to see. The amount of food these guys get on the road is incredible. I talked to the hotel crew, and I said, you would think the UK offensive linemen were eating. There was so much food. That was amazing.
And when will this air?
This will air the 1st of March. We're still making sure that all of our T's are crossed and I's dotted, but it will air right around the SEC tournament time.
Good deal. Look forward to it. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Tom.
25 after the top of the hour. Heading to a break. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Chris Fisher coming up next.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Chris Fisher joins us from catspaws.com. Well, we'll start with the review and the non-call of basket interference and all of this. So we'll get to every guest's opinion today, Chris. So you're next. Where do you stand on it? Should a rule be changed or tweaked, or what's your thought?
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that, you know, if you can go to the monitor and check whether the tip-in was in time, you can also check whether the ball was in the cylinder. That seems pretty straightforward to me, especially watching the Duke-Louisville game last night, and they can go to the monitor and check to see whether it was a block or charge based on, you know, whether a player's foot was in the arc. And so that seems pretty straightforward to me. I think it's like John Calipari said last night, they're the Wilt Chamberlain of getting rules changed.
Yeah, you know, and that particular thing with the issue of the basket interference and the imaginary cylinder and all of that, your point on the Louisville game is an interesting one, because folks that didn't see it, obviously Louisville lost a 23-point lead and the game's tied. And I think it was Reddish for Duke drove into the lane, and the original call was charging on a collision under the basket. And they went able to go to the monitor and see that McMahon's left foot was inside the arc, the block charge arc, and so they were able to change it to a block, and Reddish hit the two free throws that decided the game. So even though this was a non-call, you could make the argument that it was a call was made in the call that they didn't make, if that makes sense, because you had a ball that's clearly in or out of the cylinder if you got the right angle.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the block charge is a judgment call, and I think that's what they want to try to keep away from is reviewing judgment calls. But at the same time,
you've got that arc there.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like you've got the imaginary cylinder that you can, you know, it's not... I think that's one that you can make the similar case about. We got to get to the quick break. Chris, we'll come back with more in just a moment on the Leach Report Radio Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Second half of our show for this Wednesday, we're chatting with Chris Fisher on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. He's with catspaws.com at ChrisFisher 24/7 on Twitter. I think this is something that, I tell you what, Chris, if this had happened in an NCAA tournament game, I guarantee you it would be a major topic for discussion, and we might see a rule change. With a regular season game, I don't know. Do you think this would be enough to prompt the discussion?
Yeah, I think so, just because it seems like such an easy fix for the referees to be allowed to go to the monitor and and correct something. At the end of the day, it's about getting it right. And if you can go to the monitor and, you know, and correct it, especially in a game deciding play like that, I think you have to do it. But also at the end of the day, I think, you know, obviously Kentucky could have done a bunch of things to not put themselves in that position. I mean, the tip-in gets you beat, but I thought Skylar Mays was able to get to the rim way too easily on that final possession. And I think LSU did a lot of good things in the second half to take Kentucky out of its rhythm offensively, and I think that was the real difference in the game.
Yeah, Kentucky in all four of its losses has averaged 26% on the three-point shot. So that has been an issue for Kentucky in the games that it has lost, is not being able to hit the perimeter shots, and that was the case. They shot 26% last night, right on that number. And then the guy who LSU was having the most trouble guarding, P.J. Washington, you lost for an extended stretch because he picked up his fourth foul.
Yeah, and going into last night's game, I was a little skeptical of LSU, despite the obvious talent, the gaudy, you know, win-loss record. I wasn't sold, but after last night, even not getting, you know, a great game from Tremont Waters, Naz Reid, probably their second-best player, was saddled with foul trouble for much of the night, to come into Rupp Arena and you know, I think pick up the ninth win on Kentucky's home court under John Calipari, snap Kentucky's 10-game win streak. I think that says a lot about what kind of club they have. I think they're really dangerous. They have playmakers at the guard position. They have an endless supply of talent and length and athleticism in the front court, and I think that really bothered Kentucky last night.
No, you make a really good point. That was a very impressive performance by LSU. Emmett Williams, I think, was 5 for 5 and had, I want to say, 6 rebounds, and he was a big force in the second half. If you want to point to one guy that might have made the difference for LSU, you might go to him.
Yeah, I don't think there was any question. He was the X factor. Had a couple big baskets on putbacks down the stretch, and I also thought that Tremont Waters really had an off night offensively, but leaving Ashton Hagans and kind of just playing center field all over the floor and wreaking havoc defensively. Kentucky looked like at times they were timid, they were unsure of themselves, and when you have that guy, you know, running around and knocking balls loose and getting in passing lanes, and then you have that length and athleticism at the rim, I can certainly see why.
Ashton, it seems to me, has got to find a way to make peace and to get comfortable with how people are playing him. And, you know, John Wall, you know, had some times when people were, you know, weren't guarding him for his outside shot. And you have to, you know, he had tremendous speed, but Ashton certainly got tremendous athleticism himself. He's got to find a way to counterpunch what teams are doing to him, it seems.
Yeah, he's certainly come back to earth a little bit here over the last couple of weeks. I think that's you know, pretty much par for the course for a freshman. You're going to have ups and downs and things like that. But you're right. Teams are playing completely off of him and doubling down on the post, usually from his man. So he's going to have to get in the gym and build his confidence, work on his jump shot, and like you said, learn a counterpunch to how teams are defending him.
Yeah, or maybe it's, you know, it's drive it in there and you hit, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be the 18 or 20 footer. Maybe it's, you know, drive it in there and hitting an occasional floater, some way to make them have to play you differently to counterpunch what is going on. One other thing that this Kentucky dude tweeting in about Tyler Hero shooting at Rupp Arena, he says, we need Tyler to shoot at Rupp like the Kentucky opponents who come in and roast the Nets. For some reason, he's killing it on the road, but not at Rupp. He says, do I notice that too? Obviously I do. And in fact, I've got a stat already in my notes for Saturday. He's in SEC play shooting 53% from the field on the road and 42% at Rupp. It's strange.
Maybe Kentucky fans should boo Tyler Hero every time he touches the ball. Maybe that would help his shooting percentages. But I am a little bit baffled to this point in the season at how many open shots this team tends to miss. John Calipari's been insistent all season long. He thinks this is his best shooting team at Kentucky, but Had a lot of open looks last night. I feel like here over the last couple of weeks there have been plenty of games where Kentucky's had really good looks from the perimeter and just can't seem to knock them down. I'm not sure what the problem there is, and I'm not sure what the solution for making open shots is either.
Maybe they need to do like football teams do, take them to a hotel the night before a game, even for home games. Get Tyler in the road mode. Chris, thank you much.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Chris Fisher, catspaws.com. We're coming up on 20 away from the top of the hour. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. You can find them in Palomar and in the Hamburg Center here. Whichever one you go to, know that everything on that menu is made from scratch, including the award-winning mimosas. If you want a little bar with your breakfast or brunch or lunch at Wild Eggs, come right back with Chris Fisher for the Blue Ribbon Yearbook.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach KY.
Back to the Kentucky Brandon Hotline, and we bring on Chris Dortch from the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. And I scheduled Chris thinking that most of our discussion would be looking ahead to Saturday's matchup with Tennessee, but we need to spend a little time on what happened at Rupp Arena last night, Chris. And we'll start with where I've started with the previous two guests on the show today, and the debate about the non-call of basket interference, and when they go to the monitor, the crew can't look at that. All they can look at in that situation is, was it good or not in terms of a timing issue? So is this something that you think will or should get addressed in terms of expanding what can be reviewed?
You know, it only makes sense to me, Tom, if they're at the monitor anyway. I guess I heard Jay Williams on ESPN say that the ball was not was in the cylinder.
Yes.
And I looked at it, and I don't know. I didn't see it that way, but I'll have to look at it again. In answer to the question, I think if it's in the final 2 minutes of a game, I think a call like that, since they're at the monitor anyway, what's it going to hurt?
It's funny you bring that up. My producer, he and I have been talking during breaks, and he has seen an angle where it looks like it maybe was off the rim. I have not seen that angle yet, so I'm still looking. So
that's the one I saw. I think he's referring to the one that was like from the camera from the other end of the court.
Okay.
And from there, it looks like the ball was out and legally tapped in and not all offensive goaltended. So, it's a shame for any team to lose on a bang-bang play like that. And my opinion has always been that referees have a tough job, and if we can make it easier for them, especially in the final 2 minutes when things like that are decided, when careers are decided and, you know, tournament advancement and seeding is decided, I think that it should be fair game to be able to analyze that. But, yeah, I think he's referring to the view from the camera from the other end of the court. And from there, head on facing the rim, it sure looked to me like the ball was out of the cylinder, but again, I'd hate to be an official because, gosh, those things happen so quickly. And, you know, they always say, it's funny, it never fails. It's not the first shot you worry about in a last-second situation. It's that weak side offensive rebound, and
yeah,
that's what happened.
Yeah, two guys went for the block and left LSU clear. And credit Mays for the way he played it, and Cal teaches his guys to do this. You're in that situation, going to the basket, if you can't just get straight to the rim and lay it in, shoot it up high, because there's a good chance our guys will get this, what Cal tells his players, our guys will get the rebound, and that's what happened for LSU.
That's right.
Well played by
Mays. That's right.
By Mays.
And it's just one of those situations where everything that needed to happen happened in the perfect sequence.
Yeah.
And you know, whether it was goaltending or not, and they couldn't comment, or they couldn't reverse a decision, that stood on the floor at the time. I think that's regrettable, again, in the final 2 minutes when so much can happen and so much is at stake, especially as we start to get into March. I think that's something that bears reconsideration.
Impressive performance by LSU, certainly. And then, you know, on the line, it's been a week. I was watching Carolina and Virginia Monday night. These last, you know, there was probably less than a second total that cost Carolina 5 points in that game. There was a play at the end of the half where the ball gets knocked loose as the time's running down, and the Carolina guy goes and scoops it up and scores. But it turns out that the shot clock expired right before he scooped it up.
Yeah, I remember that
play. So the officials called it properly and had to wave off the basket. And then there was the one where Kobe White hit an incredible shot just ahead of the shot clock buzzer going off. And then on review, they were able to see that the ball was still on his fingertip when the shot clock hit zero. So there was 5 points. Could have been huge in that game. And you know, this play
exactly,
last night.
Yeah, yeah. The first play you talked about was captured from that camera that I mentioned. You could plainly see zero on the shot clock. I'm just a big believer in the last 2 minutes of halves, say, that things happen at an accelerated pace. And it has been a week. I mean, look what happened at Louisville last night.
Yeah. Yeah, you had the overturn of the block charge call there. That was incredible.
Yeah, and then just Duke coming back from 22. I got a text from the ETSU coach. They were ahead 22 on Xavier last year and lost. And he said, man, I guess Chris Mack is getting a little karma. But it's crazy how things happen.
Does that show
when you're dealing with? I'm sorry, go ahead.
As I said, did that show any vulnerability in Duke looking at the bigger picture for you?
Well, I think that, in a way, yeah. I think that Duke is, no matter how talented they are, they're still young, and there's still experiences that they haven't gone through, and that's why you look at a team like Tennessee, which I know you wanted to talk about, and their guys – they've got two seniors in the lineup and a fourth-year junior and two other juniors. So by this time, they've been through the wars as opposed to, you know, Duke, which relies, as you know, heavily on freshmen, as does Kentucky. But it's fairly new for Duke. Cal seems to get his players to gel every February and March. It's fairly new for Duke. It's been kind of a feast or famine for them. They either win it all or they get bounced early. It's kind of funny that way.
Let's talk a little bit about Kentucky and Tennessee coming up on Saturday. I was looking yesterday, doing a little work ahead. I think since 1920, Tennessee has won in Lexington in back-to-back years one time, and it was Bernie and Ernie. And it was in two different arenas, actually, the Coliseum and in Rupp Arena. So that's what Tennessee is going to be attempting to do, among other things, when they come in here on Saturday. This is a team that, like LSU, does a lot of its damage in the paint. So that's going to be a key. Give me an early thought on the Kentucky-Tennessee matchup.
Well, I think that so far, and I've watched both Kentucky and Tennessee quite a bit, and so far, what I've seen out of this Tennessee team is, I guess this is a word, unflappability.
It's not, it should
they
be.
Just don't, yeah, it sounds good. But they don't seem to get rattled. And what Rick Barnes done, and I know Rick and Cal are close, and Cal has said nice things about what Rick has done, and the beauty of what Barnes has done is that he's convinced these guys that A, they need to hang their hat on defense, although their defense I don't think is as reliable this year as it was a year ago. And the other thing is that they have to value every possession. And you can really go back game by game and you can't count on one hand the bad shots that they're taking these days, even when they get behind. even on the road. So they just feel like if we just keep doing what we do, and basically what that's done, and he'll tell you this, they scrimmage Davidson every year instead of having a public exhibition game, which has been great for them because Davidson coach Bob McKillop is an offensive genius, and they've basically lifted his offense. You know, they try to score in transition if they can. Their next step is to get a paint touch, whether it's in the, you know, Grant Williams or Kyle Alexander, or whether it's Jordan Bone getting into the paint. If they can't do that, then they're running off screens and curls and trying to get medium range jumpers. And then if a three is open, they'll take it. But in terms of power conference teams, they're not very reliant on the three, especially as compared to an Auburn, say. And the other thing is, Tom, last year they shot 47% from two-point range, which was somewhere around 270th of the country. This year they're shooting 58%, which is in the top 10.
What are the minute or so left here keys for Kentucky to have to be able to pull off the win?
Well, I think that they're going to have to contain as best they can Grant Williams because everything revolves around him. And then Ashton Hagen versus Jordan Bone matchup is going to be key. Ashton is an excellent defender. Jordan is quick on quick. He's been a huge key to what they've done, unheralded versus Schofield and Williams, but he makes it all go, and he's leading the league in assists and assist to turnover ratio. He's a Bob Cousy Award, a serious threat to win that. So I think they need to contain him and then slow down Grant Williams as much as they can.
Will we see you in Rupp Saturday?
I wish I could be there, but I'll be watching on the tube, that's for sure.
Well, I'll see you in Knoxville then in a few weeks. Thank you, Chris.
I'll be there. Thank you.
At C. Dortch on Twitter, BlueRibbonYearbookOnline.com. And you can still pick up a copy of that could be useful for your NCAA bracket predictions when those come around. Got to get to our final break. We'll come back and wrap it up in just a moment on the Leach Report Radio Network. Not a slice of Wildcat history. This day in 1951, one of the most incredible single-game performances by a Kentucky player. Bill Spivey had 40 points and 34 rebounds in a 78-51 win over Xavier. Scores from last night, we mentioned the Duke incredible comeback from 23 down to win at Louisville. Michigan lost last night, so that was 75-69 to Penn State. So Michigan's one of the teams that you're kind of scoreboard watching if you're a Kentucky fan. Maybe with Michigan State, too, they beat Wisconsin 67-59. Purdue, which is on the three-seed line in the latest bracket from the committee, Purdue lost at Maryland 70-56 last night. So there's going to be a lot of ebb and flow over the next few weeks as this thing plays out. Cats back in action on Saturday against number one Tennessee, and we'll get into more of that tomorrow with Mike Pratt, Justin Rowland, and others, Mike DeCourcy on Friday. It's the Leach Report served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com.